Don Gill, welcome to Voice of the People Radio.
Thank you very much, Gregory, for having me on today. It's beautiful here in San Diego as well.
Yeah, it's been the weather has been something for everybody, and I know that there's maybe a few people who are actually picking us up out of some stations in New York, and they still don't have electricity in some places, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so our hearts go out to the people who are actually probably listening to us under some kind of generator power. And if you know, there but for grace go I. You know, I could have a lightning strike or a tornado. I actually happen to have went from tornado country to lightning and thunderstorm and tornado country. So I'm not really looking forward to a disaster, and I'm just looking forward to the date that, you know, hopefully everybody has everything back up and running before Christmas, because that's part of the series of tragedies that we go through sometimes if we choose to not look at it in an all too positive light is the process of recovery. And like my wife is very fond of saying, Angel, there can be no construction without the destruction.
Well, that is true, but we would hope that we wouldn't have to go through that type. But, you know, it sure does bring neighbor out with neighbor, doesn't it? I mean, their power. One woman commented that she could see the stars at night for the first time in a long time. So there's blessings underneath all of any experience, as everybody knows.
They're coming at me from somewhere either in front of where I was at on the stream, or maybe they're a little bit behind where I can see them, and I'm still on the stream, and we're all sort of in this stream of consciousness.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as far as the whole opinion about source creating destruction, I certainly don't get that. You know, when I'm in the Akashic Records, I don't perceive a source at all that causes that. In fact, you know, it's our own imbalances that cause it, and unfortunately, you know, Source would prefer that we move through cycles and shifts in glorious ways and ecstatic
somewhere
ways,
either
not through, but unfortunately, you know, that all has
but
to do with, you know, that all has to do with us and what are
their
beliefs.
People are in their consciousness
and their
what
opinions
are their
about
beliefs.
Things because
and their opinions about things
you know, we kind of have a dualistic mind.
You know, we kind of have a dualistic mind.
We do,
you know,
positive and negative all day long.
We do positive and negative all day long
about things
in terms of our
but
opinions.
But it really
about
is
things.
An effort to,
but it really
like you
is
say,
an effort
take a
to,
look at yourself.
Like you say,
stop your mind and really take a
stop your mind
and actually
doing
at
any given moment.
What is it actually
because
doing
that's
at any
really
moment?
That's really
because
what
that's really
that's really
what determines what gets created here, and we're all in this
together.
So we're all creating it together.
But certainly, it is not a requirement.
But certainly, it is not a requirement
of life to move through hardship.
Life. My experience of source is, and I'm going from what I experience when I'm in the records, okay? Because until that point, I may have defined it a different way in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels that it is, it does feel like it's a being, but it's a being that is the all that is. So sometimes, especially in the book, I'll refer to source as source A, and I explain that in the book, that it may seem like I'm talking about
that
in the book, entities or appearances, but I'm not, because it's all the same thing. But I would define source as... the intelligence that really runs the universe, or is conscious in the universe, and it's in every cell of our bodies as well. There's nothing that is not, that doesn't contain it really. Okay, it's just all vibrating at very different rates of vibration, in terms of how aware it is of the fact that source is contained within it. So to me, it's as near as your own skin. You know, it's. Sources inside you, out in the stars, through every living thing, through every relationship. It is the creation. That's how I would define it.
All right, and I really like the way that it was put on the back. I'm going to read the back of the book a little bit for everybody that's in the listening audience. You know, and this was a fairly cool point. Yeah, you know, Einstein stated that the only thing that matters is the field. And Max Planck, author of quantum theory, stated that the matrix is where everything originates. Okay. So we've come to...
And I do get that it's an intelligent field that had an intention, you know, and that intention stands. You know, that intention cannot be destroyed by anybody.
And that goes into... And I know we've got a couple people who are listening... that are going to say, Angel, what are the records? What are the Akashic records, and where are they?
Right, okay. Well, the Akashic records is basically a library of creation. Every single thing that is, you know, similar to a library or a huge database where all creation is recorded, but how I experience it is that it really is everywhere, that record is contained in everything you see and can be accessed, you know, through your own mind and spirit or through a rock or a crystal or anything, really. It can be accessed. If we were in communication with life at those levels, which the majority of us aren't. All right, but the Akashic Records is really a recording process, and people who have near-death experiences, who say that they see their whole life flash in front of them at the point of death or would-be death, report that they see their whole entire lives just videotaped out in front of them, even something as small as an insect walking by them on the street, which I find pretty incredible.
Wow. So it's like... taking, you know, and I've heard people use the expression before, you know, that if there was a God, God was nothing more than a giant computer sitting there recording everything that happened. But what we're sort of saying is... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think when people do say that, the difference is, you know, on the one level you could say, yeah, all right, it functions in a way where it records everything. But the difference is the records have to do with relationships. And those relationships do with how we're all interconnected and interwoven, and our own personal relationship with that source and with each other and actually with all life. So there is a purpose here. There is a, I want to say, an emotional counterpart in terms of love being the basis behind it all, in terms of ecstasy and joy.
And, you know, you said that people that have the near-death experiences or other traumatic events end up seeing this, you know, the life review. They become exposed, perhaps consciously, for the first time to a recall of the records. We're not either in an accident and they're about to die, or, you know, they're really sick and they're in the hospital. How is, you know, Joe Sixpack, that's listening to Voice of the People and on Gale, going to be able to receive information from the records?
Well, you know, Joe Sixpack, or somebody who would, let's say, be interested in their body and working out like that,
mm-hmm.
could actually connect, you know, to their own soul stream if they were to really be connected to their body as a unit or as a being or as a connection to their own spirit. Like, they wouldn't have to go meditate. They could do it pumping iron, you know? And, you know, I just think that it can be found anywhere if that's your intention. But it does have to do with internal versus external in terms of where your focus is, because the records are at a frequency level that you can only access if you match it. So, like I said, even though the information is contained anywhere, you know, a person's ability to be compatible with the frequency where it's located, individual for everyone. So I do think it's an inner process as opposed to an external one. But, you know, then again, you know, you're going to chuckle at this, but I do remember years ago when, a lot of years ago, when I was younger and was raising children and they'd be taking naps, so maybe I was watching a soap opera, you know, for example, okay? But I actually learned spiritually through watching the soap opera, and so I just make the point that source could be reached or your own spirit could be reached through anything if that was where you
were. Probably have an experience with the records, as you said, if they're laying back, they're relaxing finally for the first time in hours, and then they end up having something funny like an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be
out-of-body experience, or suddenly some memory of a lifetime, or
like that. That could happen.
Could be spontaneously. Like
that. That could happen.
I will say too, and I do think each person's spirit may have a plan in terms of when would it maybe trigger something like that for a person. And I find I've had experiences myself before I learned to read the records consciously, where on cue, it was like on cue, something would occur, you know, that woke me up. And I think everybody's spirit has that plan on some level, or at least tries to.
And that brings us to, can we describe the differences, Angel, for people who are completely between spirit, like we're talking about having that spiritual awakening, sitting there and you're just zoned from the TV and the kids have wore you out, the individuated spirit, the soul, and then the mind and the brain, because we're talking about different parts of the same person, aren't we?
We are, yeah. Okay, that's a great question, actually, and it was quite an enlightening experience when Source was explaining that to us. But Source would say that we are all an individuated spirit. In other words, we, you know, in terms of individual consciousness, it would concern through the various incarnations is having experiences. And it uses vehicles to do that with. So let's say, you know, your spirit wants to have an experience of Earth. So it would downstep itself in a way where it has to take on a physical body. And I do want to comment that I do feel that each person's physical body is a manifestation of their own spirit to a lesser degree. So I know some people perceive it as separate, in terms of the bodies, nothing but the dead pieces of meat, and you know, you throw it away when you're finished. But I actually think if you can come to the awareness that you created it, it takes on a real different purpose for you rather than something to discard at the end of your life. But so to me, our basic nature is spirit, and that spirit is the part of us that is observing, is thinking, is deciding, is coming to conclusions about our experiences. And then it comes down where the soul is actually almost like a record or an accumulation of what we've gained or didn't gain in any particular lifetime. So the soul builds around different light rays that get formed around a person once they master something, or they grow and they mature spiritually. They gain color bands. Okay, so they would start to shine, and eventually they become pure white light. All right, but the soul is the part of us that, you know, you would see that would show that record, okay? And then it comes down, like the thoughts that the spirit thinks, the conclusions it comes to, goes through the mind level. And the mind level is really a substance. It's very pliable, and it takes thoughts, and it takes ideas, and it coalesces them into a particular form or a particular manifestation. And then that gets downstepped to the brain. And the brain, you know, from what we saw, is an interface system. It really looks like it's non-local. And even though, you know, you can look at a picture of the brain and you can see right and left hemispheres and substance, when you look at the brain spiritually, it's energy, and you see all these lights going back and forth, relaying signals and information, take direction, and they say, right, I'll go ahead and inform the body this way or that way according to what the spirit ultimately thinks and believes. So that's how it gets downstepped.
A lot of conversation,
you know, a lot of conversation where people believe that the mind,
is
what
creator,
you have to change,
the mind
in order
is
for
what
you have
to
change
in order for
a
healing
a different
to occur,
manifestation to happen. But it's really the spirit that has to do that. And I think that's such an important realization, because many of us have had the belief that our individuated spirits are perfect. And I'm being clear to say individuated spirit, and I'll explain what I mean later. But the individuated spirit, because it's sojourning through the universes, it's having experiences, and it can definitely experience trauma. There can be fragmented spirits. There can be a portion of yourself that could have gone through a tragedy or an experience and therefore has come to a conclusion that really isn't to its highest benefit. So true healing has to occur at that spiritual level of us. That's why sometimes affirmations don't work for people, or they may work for a little while, but then they seem to revert back into an old feeling or an old situation. It's because it's not permanent if you try to change the concept only at the mind level.
Mm-hmm.
So did that explain it?
Yeah, and I have a little bit of an off-the-wall question for you, Angel. It's
okay.
Something that's been perplexing me for weeks, because we always talk to our friends that are, you know, biological scientists, and then we see in the news, and we know that people in the scientific field say that, you know, consciousness is supposed to be seated in the physical realm, you know, in the body, in the some of the people listening might be familiar with it too. There was a family, and the little boy was born with this form of encephalopathy that meant that he didn't have anything other than the motor part of the brainstem.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and so the rest of his, you know, he didn't have the fully developed brain mm-hmm. that days. And yet this young boy was actually around 3 years old, and if I'm not mistaken, at the time that he passed from this place, he was actually out playing in a pumpkin patch. And
okay.
And so it made me take a step back, and I looked at it, and I said, well, what would all these scientists say about, you know, the seat of your consciousness and everything, and your, you know, reasoning, and everything has to do with this, the one organ in the body. Do you have any idea what's going on there from your perspective, where, you know, we have this wonderful child?
Yeah, well, the thing about, let me comment that first about children. Children, you know, we have to remember are conscious spirits, and they're not young. I mean, they're going through different incarnations, and they come in as a baby or a child, but their consciousness isn't necessarily a baby or a child, and their spirit certainly isn't. You know, I mean, not to say you never have young spirits who come here and this is their first incarnation, but you have to keep in mind what the spirit's here to do, because every spirit comes in here with a plan, and they come in here, you know, with that plan wanting to be completed. So a lot of times when children leave, they're doing it for their own reasons, and this is one of the of doing private Akashic reading sessions, is that you can see the whole soul stream. You're doing what it is that, you know, the true seat of the true intelligence is in the heart. But, you know, I just think that it's the spirit that is the seat of consciousness, because when somebody dies, it's their spirit that leaves. You know, it's the spirit that's animating the body. Nothing more, nothing less. The body is taking direction, you know, from the spirit, but it just does it through a brain interface. And that's how we need to think about it, because if you could see the brain the way it was shown to us, it's clear. It's invisible. It's a relay station of light things being switched on and switched off and on and off and on and off. And it's non-local, okay? So you couldn't, like, dissect a cell in the brain that, you know, supposedly the limbic system, you know, is the seat of the emotions. But you can't dissect those cells and find emotions in there, okay? So, you know, I know we're trying to, in fact, you know, the night that we had this conversation about the brain, we actually had a group that was the topic. We were only going to talk about the brain. We were going to go into all the different lobes and ask Source what they all meant. And as soon as we asked Source about the brain, this is what it showed us. It said, I can't dissect the lobes because it functions as a unit. And if you take out part of a brain, other parts will compensate. Okay, so that's been happened as well for people where they've lost a piece of their brain or a particular lobe doesn't function and the rest of the brain will take over. So how can you say that one particular lobe does one thing and one does another? Because, you know, okay, they'll function in harmony with each other, but if one goes down, another part will help to take over as best it can.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it just goes to show you that the whole thing functions as a singularity. The person functions as a single unit, going back up the brain in tandem with the
impressions with the soul and
being impressions with
driven
the soul
around by
and
spirit.
Driven around
it's
by the spirit.
Too, Gregory, mm-hmm. You know, that the body feels something. You know, when you feel something, the whole body registers it instantaneously at the same time. It's not like you feel something in one part of your body and then, you know, it sends a message to the rest. Every single cell feels it at the same moment. So, you know, the body is, you're like you're saying, the whole thing really happens instantaneously, and we try to dissect it into processes, but there really isn't any time delay. In fact, you know, they've done studies and proven that with DNA samples, taking parts of DNA and putting them in a petri dish in one location and sending another DNA sample of the same person miles and miles away, and they have people send particular emotions to the DNA, and the DNA starts to change its shape and everything else by the emotions that are being sent to it, and yet both DNA samples feel it at the same moment, and the time, space, and distance has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and that's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and these are mechanisms, really, on Gail, that our modern science is just beginning to understand. And yet, in the past, we probably have, I'm just going to do a point of conjecture here, in the past we've probably been close to, if not past, the level of technology that we have today. And
right.
And so when we go back, we can look, and then we say that by learning how to go through the records, we can learn, you know, universally wondering about is, can they use the process of reading the Akashic records to predict the future?
Well, what has happened is you can see probable futures, because I'm not somebody who believes that any future is absolutely fixed.
Map made.
Okay. You know, I think there's a map
before
made.
We come in here.
You know, I think we make
and
a map,
we make
before
a,
we come
you
in
know,
here.
A blueprint
and
what
we'd
like
to take
you know,
place,
a blueprint.
Or we set things up, you know, a certain way. But, you know, the whole process of free will can change anything. So when you're in the records, let's say somebody asked me a question, and of course they've asked me the Earth Change question numerous times. And you can look and see a possible scenario as it's looking from that particular moment, okay? The source would always be really clear to say, this is just at the moment of your consciousness. So you could ask the same question tomorrow, and all the grids of the Earth could have shifted, and, you know, a whole lot of stuff could have happened, okay? So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not absolutely fixed. It's true that you can see different timelines, and a lot of those timelines are dependent upon choices that are made and how consciousness shifts and all of that. So, but yeah, you can definitely see, you know, the way the movie's going.
Oh, yeah. It
changes. Yeah.
You know, and that whole thing about, you know, where's your consciousness at any given point in time? And with regard to, you know, past events and future events, it just reminds me again, and it keeps coming up, that I keep remembering sitting with my brother in Manhattan in the middle of the night, and he's looking around, and he's, where are we? I said, well, you know, we're at the World Trade Center. You might want to take a good look around at it, because you might not get to see it again. And for the life of me, it's like, you know, that was kind of odd. And, you know, he kind of gives me that hours.
Right.
And so for me to be able to sit there and try to pinpoint that, it would probably make me crazy. But I do know from that experience, askance look out of my mouth.
Right. And so how long from when you said that to when it actually fell?
The next day.
Okay, so, you know, in a situation...
necessarily the records that were that. It was just source, you know. It was just the impulse.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, going down because I'm just feeling this thing and having my skin crawl.
Yeah, and you have the cogs.
You have this whole thing where you've got
yeah,
your hair
you
standing
the
up on the back of your neck, and you're watching because...
I mean,
okay, and... I have no idea what that was, and I apologize to everybody that's in our listening audience.
This is what I mean. You see how the future can just change.
Yeah, somewhere Johnny Weissmuller is laughing at me right now.
Oh, dear. But I do think there is a part of us instinctually that is connected to the field that's all around the Earth. And, you know, in the same way that animals know what's good, if they know if a storm's coming, you know, they all head for the high hills or, you know, whatever they do, you know, they have this inner, they're connected to the electromagnetic grid and they can feel it vibrationally in the grid, so they just react to it.
Kind of dumb down our own instinctual nature
that
way.
Kind of dumb down our own instinctual nature
okay.
that way. But certainly in those times when you come out and you say, you know, take a good look because it may not be here tomorrow, you know? That could be your own instinctual nature tuning into the field of the event that's already happened on the level of energy because it happens there first, okay? So, you know, that's probably what you were tuning into. And I think when people get gut feelings or they get, you know, they say they just have a hunch, you know, their own instinctual nature is piping in to a particular frequency in the field, and they're coming out with it. take any kind of a feeling like that. Let's say if I, you know, fast forward you back into the time where you made that comment, you know, to your brother, where you say, take a good look because you won't see it anymore. And if you were a conscious creator, you could catch yourself and you could say, now, hang on, you know, what's this I'm
look
feeling?
At it a little deeper, and then
you
might have gotten
look at it a little
it
deeper, and then you might have gotten
into tune with
it. Be
here.
I don't. All right, so, you know, if it were me, I would say, well, gee, I hope that's not the case. You know, I'm going to send it positive thoughts. And, you know, whether it makes a difference or not is hard to tell because nobody's doing that and the event happened, you know? So, in other words, how many people are thinking about the World Trade Center on a day-to-day basis that it's going to fall down?
You know, really, really not very many. And to be honest with you about it, as you say that, it happened to be something that I had written up in a paper that I was asked to go through. And the idea had actually not only occurred to me then, but it was written up by somebody doing a safety study in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And their premise was that somebody might, you know, in fact, do exactly what happened. And ever since that happened, I have to wonder, you know, did the people who were involved in all of that happen to read the same piece of research coming out of, you know, and you just do, that is something that you can explore actually using the Akashic Records.
It is, yes, you could explore it. But, you know, we have, you know, we haven't ever really asked about that, and it's probably a good thing to bring to the group sometime, because I'm sure people have a lot of questions about that, and I have my own opinions, but actually I know better than to express them if I haven't asked source first.
Yeah, that's the one of the key things about it, isn't it, Angel, that what we're doing is we're also going through a process where you are asking source for a confirmation.
Well, what we do is I actually, I spend whatever source has to say in answer to a question, because certainly I've been, you know, blown away numerous times by the answers that come in response to a question that I think would be an obvious answer. You know, then I get this big, you know, channel or info, and I'm like, wow. Such is the brain. You know, there we were all assuming that we were going to go in as scientists and we were going to decipher all the lobes of the brain and understand them all and their functions and all this and that. And then, you know, what do we get? We get shown it's a relay station that can't be fined or dissected in the way we thought we were going to do it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, the brain to me, to put it in my, I guess, my own little terms, is like this, you know, fueled mechanism that's, you know, running at the speed of light on oxygen, and once it's deprived of that oxygen, those connections over the course of just a few minutes will actually break down to the point that the mechanism isn't useful to you anymore. But we also know from people having accidents and being nearly frozen that several hours later they can actually be revived. So it's not,
right,
not in some cases as permanent as we would be led to believe.
But I still have to say, even in those times, Gregory, build a spirit. You know, that's being revived. It's the spirit that's not gone. It's the spirit that's not leaving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be revived because the spirit is still got work to do, or its plan is to go. And the way that you know that is because when you see the many ways that people die, and somebody can be in a horribly tragic accident, and you drive by the scene and you say to yourself, there's no way that those people survived. And yet, there's people that come out of the most bizarre circumstances tripping on a piece of ice, you know?
I've actually experienced both of those, you know, types of events, and it's just mind-boggling.
Yes. So that's how you know that it's not about the body. It's about the spirit and what it's doing, okay, that determines if somebody actually leaves or they stay.
You imbecile!
And then there are the cases, Gil, where we have people who are not wanting to hold on to life, where they're suffering from a terminal illness or they're incredibly sick,
and we ask those questions about
what's really going on in that process.
What's really going on in that process? Where people
use that term, lost the will to live.
Right. Well, you know, I just think that, you know, spirits get tired. I mean, especially now, you know, in this particular time period that we're in all the readings that I've done, I have so many people who, you know, all they want to know is this my last life? Am I out of here? Okay? That there is a, you know, spirits get tired of being on Earth and doing the Earth particular vibration. For lots of us, it's a struggle. You know, it's been a life of struggle and ups and downs and difficulties. People can lose the will to live. And, you know, when I see people who are really, really ill, they're obviously not going to survive for any reason, and yet they're still hanging around, you know. Some hang around for years. You know, to me, you would have to know that they're, on a inner level, they're still working through something. Maybe they're, you know, tallying up some old karma. Maybe they're sticking around for the people around them. But there's a purpose to it, that they're not leaving. And unfortunately, you know, for them consciously, they'll say, yeah, you know, I just want to go. Why am I being kept here? But I've seen enough to know that it's for a particular purpose. And so that's my answer to that, really. And you look at the people who have Alzheimer's. We can use it, so his body's not going to deteriorate anytime soon. You know, I think he's been in a special care place now for a good 10 years, and he's still got Alzheimer's, and it gets worse and worse in terms of his memory, but he's still physically as strong as an ox, okay? So what are these people doing,
because,
for an example? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times when I do look into particular people who have Alzheimer's, they're back and forth between this world and the spirit world, and they're conversing with both realities. And, you know, so why are they still around? Well, I just think that's old karma. You know, don't know what it is in particular, because that's individual for each person. But I do think there's a reason for it.
So some of them, the balance, they could be trying to affect the balance.
Yeah, they could be doing so many things, Gregory, on so many levels. And this is the thing about judgment. You know, I'll bring that up briefly just because it makes me think of it. It's the reason why we really can't judge anyone, because you really have no idea what's going on with somebody on the inner levels. And another quick example is, you know, I had a girlfriend who, I'd say she's pretty spiritually conscious, right? And she was married to somebody who was an airplane mechanic. He was the most asleep person in the world, you know, because he wasn't interested in anything spiritual and just wanted to go to his job and look at women, you know. So here he is dreaming one night, and he's talking in his sleep. And what's he talking about? He's talking about, did you check the earth grids over in this part of the world? And, you know, what about over here? And, you know, the guy wakes up, he's got no recollection of the fact that on inner levels he's doing grid work on the planet. So, I mean, I think it just makes the point, you know, that you really don't know who anybody is or what they're doing, and, you know, what looks like something on the outside may not be what's going on the inside.
Yeah, and that's something else. If, Gail, if we can explain a little bit to the audience what we mean. I think that there are 7 billion of us in the world, and in one shape or form or another, we are interacting with it on a daily basis.
We are, in fact, you know, we all have a nerve network in our solar plexus that does connect us to that planetary web. I have to be careful. I don't want to say the world web. People will think I'm talking about the internet, okay? But the planetary web, electromagnetic grid around the Earth, we're all in relationship with that there and through our feet, actually with through the lower chakras, I'd actually say from the heart down, but the heart functions in both the lower and the higher energy frequency waves. But we are all related to each other through our solar plexus. So literally, if you could imagine these wires that connect us to the Earth's electromagnetic field, which is its own chakra system or its own energy system that it has around her, just like we have around us. Consider it the Earth's meridian lines. We could use that in Chinese medicine. We know we have meridians that go through our own body. But the Earth has hers, too, and she's got vortex points and
some go the other.
Some, but we're all linked
one
to
way,
some
in
go
fact,
the other.
You know,
but we're all linked
born
to
and you put your feet, feet
you know,
on planet
you're born
Earth,
and you put your feet
you
on
inherit
planet.
The history of the planet.
It's not just yourself who's here. You know, you're now in her field. Your feet are in it, and it connects to your own energy field. In fact, your own heart, you know, our hearts beat to the heartbeat of the Earth. And when you hear about the Schumann resonance, the electrical pulse of the Earth increasing, you know, our heart increases too. Our heartbeat starts to change. If the Earth's changed, so does ours, all right? Or magnetically, we feel it through our own body, and we actually feel it in connection to each other. So there are people whose mission it is, or job it is to work with those energy fields, particularly they may have had past lives where that's what they did. They affected the grids of the Earth. There's really old, ancient techniques of changing grid patterns and working to keep a place open or protected. A lot of ancient people knew how to do that, and a lot of those people are back here now. Dowsers know how to do it. You know, people who are connected to the elemental
you'll
kingdoms.
See people know how to work with nature in that way.
So you would consider it part of nature. But we're all connected. We're definitely all connected to that. And another example is I had a girl yesterday who called me. She's a regular. She called me for a reading. But the main reason she was calling was she said, I'm just going through this anxiety. And she said, I'm not somebody who ever feels anxiety. It's not like me. I'm wondering what the hell's going on. I'm in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and or people were complaining that they feel depressed. They're waking up depressed. They don't know why. And that all has to do with the fluctuating changes that are going on in the grids right now. Because, you know, when I look at the grids, not only, you know, do you have things increasing in intensity electrically from the sun and even from the core of the Earth, and all of that affects us. That is, it just puts all of these higher frequencies out into the field, and we all have to process them. And unfortunately, I wish I could say that the way that translates into the Earth is
but,
always going to be nice and peaceful.
You know, I think it does cause
but,
earthquakes. It does cause
you know,
storms.
I think it does cause earthquakes.
People
it does
feel
cause,
that, you know, like I say, going back to an animal who feels a storm coming, you know, a lot of these emotions that we're having is it's letting us know that something's up. And in those times, I always encourage people to be really conscious that if you're feeling depressed and you feel a sense of gloom and dread coming, because that's other words people describe, those are, but I'm going to consciously choose to put my energy, you know, on a paradisical outcome instead, because we have so much energy being thrown at us right now that we can use to manifest all sorts of outcomes. But if we get stuck in the lower emotions, and you know, I do think some of those frequencies are not coming from natural sources.
Yeah, and people
I think
really
we'll be invest with a bit, you know.
Yeah, they don't need to put that energy, that nervousness, that fear response into something that's not going to benefit them. And
well, but I think the thing is, Gregory, you know, is that most of us, when
we
feel an emotion, we don't
we
really
just
say,
well,
this is what we this is
we
what
just
we
say,
feel.
Oh my God,
this is what
we're
coming,
this is what
I feel it. Certainly I've heard that even from people who want to predict earthquakes, for example, right? I mean, they're, oh, God, I feel like the big one's coming, you know, earth change prophecies and all sorts. And, you know, sources warned us about that, saying, you know, you have the power in the moment to decide which reality do you want to manifest. And it has to be a collective intention. But most people just have a feeling, and they, if they're depressed, they stay in bed all day. They don't question it. They think it's
something coming from them. Maybe they don't even understand it. But I always say, well, take a look at that, because any emotion is energy, can be used to manifest other outcomes. You can take any negative emotion because it's power. I mean, emotions are power. They're energy that's powerful. If it's negative, you can stop it in its tracks and say, great, I acknowledge that I feel this energy, but I'm going to consciously turn it around and choose. I'm going to choose peace instead of it. I'm going to choose joy instead of it. That's the kind of reality I want to manifest. All right, but this is what it means, really, to be consciously awake. That, you know, you don't, you know, Source once told us that if we were truly in the moment, every moment would be intensity. You know, that's its intensity. So, you know, we're the ones that, you know, we flip-flop back and forth between believing, you know, one minute we're believing in a doomsday scenario. The next minute we're saying, well, no, you know, I think it's going to be good. And back and forth. And Source is saying, you know, well, which master are you going to choose? You know, you need some consistency here to actually shift this paradigm into a new world. Or even your own life, for example. You know?
Yeah, a lot of people sort of don't question that negative energy. They don't question what the source of the negative energy is sometimes, and they end up walking around through their lives thinking that what society is telling them is that there's something wrong with them. So, therefore, there has to be something wrong with them. There's some weight to what's being told to them, and yet we know that they can take that negative energy, Angel, and remove the power that it has over them and reclaim it.
That's true. And, you know, another personal example I'll give you about that is years ago, you know, I remember I felt that I was coming down with this kidney infection. And I'm sitting there watching it, saying, you know, oh, where's this coming from? You know, why would I be manifesting this kidney infection? Okay, so, you know, all of a sudden, later that afternoon, I get this feeling to call my mother. Mm-hmm. So I call my mom, and she lives away, and she ends up telling me that my grandmother had been in the hospital the past few days with a kidney infection. But you see, if I never made that phone call, I was tuning into my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling the symptoms of it myself. So once I realized that, then I just said, oh, okay, that's what this is from. And immediately the symptoms disappeared. But if I didn't do that, and I never inquired and never found out that
who had it in my
family, somebody else who had it in my family, that I was
manifested a full-blown kidney infection,
because I would have personalized it. I would have said, this is mine. You know, and I think this is the point, that people don't ever really inquire. And, you know, it takes time to inquire. And,
well,
you know, I'm a big advocate for a notebook and a pen. You know, to sit down and really, you're going through something and start to examine it. Because I did years of this. If I had a backache, I sat down and said, okay, I defined what backache meant to me and it means to me. And I wrote down all these adjectives and geez, if you start doing that, you know, I remember starting with a backache and going, writing about it, and it turned out that it was some event in a past life that was running parallel to the age that I was this life.
And Gail, if we can hold that thought for everybody in the audience, we're going to take our break on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. You're listening to Voice of the People Radio. Your host, Greg Miller, and you've been listening to Angel Rose and her story about the book, A Time of Change, and we'll be right back after these words. So don't step away from your computer. And once again, just for the sake of not having dead air, you've been listening to the Voice of the People radio program on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Miller, and we've just finished the first hour. We'll be back after these words from the station with...
Hmm.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening live to the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Miller. This is Voice of the People Radio, and I'd like to thank my guest, Angel Rose, for hanging with us through a little bit of a difficulty there. Angel, welcome back to Voice of the People.
Thank you. No problem.
And what I'd like to do at the top of this next hour here is ask you if you could give everybody who listened to us in the first hour a way to contact you, the website where they can locate the book, A Time of Change,
okay,
and how they might be able to get in touch with you if they have some personal questions that they might not want to, they might not want to leave at our website.
Okay, great. Well, they can buy the book at atimeofchange.info. That's all one phrase, atimeofchange.info, or on Amazon. It's in all the electronic formats as well, so they can get it on Kindle or paper. And they can contact me by going to my email at angelrose@angelrose.com, and it's spelt angelrose@angelrose.com.
All right. So if you have an extra personal question that you'd like to ask Angel and you don't feel comfortable leaving it with the people, Voice of the People, that's okay. And I'm hoping that everybody goes through and picks something out of it, you know, as I've tried to. And I also would like to bring up, Angel, while we're talking about going and looking at the book, that it is book one in a series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the second one will be out in April of next year, and that one will be called The Nature of Reality. And it'll be a book of all the questions people have asked thus far about various aspects of reality, everything from time and dimensions to what are miracles, to love, to the body, the brain, all sorts of things that deal with things on all kinds of levels of reality, inner, outer, and okay, so that one should be pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, I'm just imagining, I know that there's somebody out there, they're tempted, they're going to say, I'm going to ask her the question because it might end up in the second book. And so we'll let them play with that and let them send that on to you so that they can hopefully, you know, find their next step on their personal journey towards truth. And I think that's sort of, you know, where hopefully we're all going, whether some of us are going there consciously or not.
Right. Well, I have to tell you, I don't know if your listeners would be interested, but certainly, number one, anything they would like to ask for me to forward to the group sessions that does have to do with the nature of reality in any way, they can go ahead and send a question in, so that would be fun. But the second part is, before I went on air, I went in and I asked Source if it had anything to tell me about this particular lineup that's occurring on the 3rd, on Monday, okay, with the three lining up to the three pyramids. And a very interesting visual that I got, which surprised me, but I saw an actual doorway opening through Venus, and I think Venus is the planet that will be in alignment with the Great Pyramid, the one in the middle. And I actually saw this beautiful blue light coming through, and it felt like Christ light. I got this sense of peace and beautiful Christ consciousness feeling. So that was a bit of a shock, because I actually got an image of, almost like an image of a second coming, but I didn't take it literally. It was more the type of light that's coming in through there. There's an opening that's going to send forth some really cosmic, you know, Christ consciousness frequency. So I thought your listeners might want to know that.
No, thanks for sharing. And that's it's intriguing. The pyramids are a great mystery unto themselves.
Yes, they are.
And the amount of knowledge that was amassed to be able to put the structures in the place where they are, in all of the different alignments, not only with the energy lines that we were talking about in the first hour of the show, but on a cosmological scale, leads me to have to dwarf, you know, my own presumptions about things. And I know that these people thousands of years ago understood things probably on a day-to-day basis on a level that's greater than anything I could learn from going through stacks and stacks of scientific journals. It's just unbelievable.
Yes. That's true. Absolutely. And even, you know, we spend a lot of time in Ireland each year, even places like Newgrange, for example, and the megalithic structures around there that are spherical in shape carry really, really interesting frequencies to them, too. Have you ever been to Newgrange yourself?
No, I haven't been there, but I know that our research director is one of the people is completely fascinated by it. It would be really interesting to know, Gail, what the feeling was that was running through him while he was there. You know, if we could
It would. Absolutely.
You know,
there's so many wonderful sacred places in Ireland and the land. You know, we were speaking in the last hour about the electromagnetic grids around the Earth. But Ireland's grids are particularly alive, and they carry really, really powerful frequencies. And a lot of the really old, ancient events that happened there, you can still feel them when you go to certain places. You can actually feel you know, what they were doing back then and what the way of life was. So it's alive in a way that I haven't yet experienced in America.
Yeah, it's really interesting to know that people can, you know, they can access this. They can know certain things. And just to ask the question, what in the chain of events in your life brought you to the realization that you had to learn how to consciously tap into the Akashic Records?
Well, it was because I was a meditator. I was somebody that I would take time every day to meditate. And but my particular type of meditation was always I wanted my higher self to teach me. You know, I never entered a meditation to still my mind. I wanted to learn. Anyway, but one day I just spontaneously found myself in my own records, and It happened a couple times. It was for a particular purpose. My spirit was showing me particular lifetimes that needed to be reconciled, so there was a reason. But what I found was that I couldn't get myself into my own records consciously. I tried, and I just couldn't get to the same place. So I actually took a course that was given by two Jewish women. I believe they were sisters. And they had in their possession this ancient prayer that got people into the records. So they taught the prayer, and they taught, you know, different exercises on how to access the records consciously. And it took me about 2 weeks to get used to the vibration of that particular, that particular field, different than anything else I'd ever experienced. But from then on, I just practiced with it a lot. I first got into my own, and I was actually taught how to, well, they called it erasing my records, even though you don't technically erase anything out of creation. That needs to be said. But what they did was for 2 weeks straight, every time I was in there, I'd be shown this videotape of different lives or different events in my own life that needed balance and needed forgiveness or needed me to say I was sorry about something, or in another case, I had to forgive someone who'd done something to me. It was 2 weeks of this, past life and current life, almost like I was having a life review now. And suddenly, you know, one day I found myself in this field of absolute pure love that had nothing to do with our world, I do have to say. It seemed to be not affected by anything that happens here. I knew that that was the place where all of the masters that we know of came from. And it was just awesome. You know, I totally got it that there was no judgment once I hit that place. But I had to go through all of this clearing first, before I could even arrive at a place where I could even, you know, see that.
And I think maybe the closest thing that myself or anyone in the listening audience is going to be able to match up to that is, like, Angel, she finally went home.
And well, I would say that, yeah. I would say it was a feeling of going back to God, absolutely. Yeah. And what I found interesting is it was showing me while I was in there that because it's not affected by anything in this world, it could also intersect this world at any point in time and change the complete paradigm of all of our laws of physics.
Sort of like one of those jokes that people are familiar with Star Trek, where they say, well, how did you do this? And the alien that's all-powerful says, oh, I just changed the gravitational constant of the universe, that's all.
Yeah, something like that. But I think that's what was so awesome about that experience was it really said that there was nothing that could go on here that couldn't be altered or changed. By, you know, they called it a miracle. We would call it a miracle, you know, this divine intersection. But it was just a property of the field of love I was in that it was nothing that it couldn't change.
Yeah, and that just shows you, bringing it back, that there's not anything in this life that you can't change. Because we are manifesting it into existence quite literally as we go along.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that people need to know, though, is, you know, I said that I had to go through weeks of, you know, kind of being confronted with videotapes of stuff that I had done or said or, you know, things that you don't think mean anything. For example, there was a, when I was in high school, there was a girl who wanted to be my friend, and I didn't like her because I didn't like the way she looked. You know how kids are, teenagers are just so mean sometimes. And they even showed me that. And the thing is, they not only showed me, brought me back to that, but they also had me feel how she felt. So,
yeah.
And I had to ask for forgiveness. I mean, it was in my heart. I had to go to her energetically and say, I'm so sorry, you know, for,
yeah,
for that, for just being, you know, so insensitive. But even something like that that was, you know, a one-time event in your high school and you forget about it and you think it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, when you have these type of experiences, you know, people have asked me too, you know, what did you think about, you know, when you die, what's going to happen to you? And I'd give them the answer, and they'd kind of look at me a little bit like I was crazy, but I'd tell them, you know, I think that one of the things that we get to do, and we don't have to die to do this, Angel, is that we get to see everything we did, and then how that either positively or negatively affected the other people in our life. And we can even see where if I did something wrong to this guy, he didn't feel else the next time the same type of opportunity presented itself to him.
Yes.
Because of what I did.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you bring it down, Gregory, everybody just wants to be loved. You know, they want to feel love. They don't want to feel judged, that's for sure. Okay? And they want to feel that they're valuable. So, you know, it taught me a huge lesson, a really huge lesson, and made me very, very, very sensitive to the feelings of others and to watch what I say and keep certain thoughts in check and, you know. But I think ultimately that's where everybody's going to come to. And, you know, and unfortunately, when we're talking about our movement through time and space, you know, my dad was raised Catholic, and he was Catholic till he died. And when he came to the time of his death, all this fear came up in him, you know. All of a sudden, all of the fear of being judged surfaced. And I'm sure everybody may go through that when they're confronted with their own death, you know. But, you know, I just felt sad, you know, when you look at the fear of, you know, you think you lived a good life, but did you really? And you know, what if you find out that there is a judging God? And, you know, my experience source is so not that. But you know, they will kind of call you on the carpet and say, hey, let's take a look at it all and see how you did.
Yeah, it's amazing to have an experience where you basically, what you've done up until the point that you've had the experience becomes illuminated for you.
Yes.
Along with this reality that it's happened before, and it's gone from the point of origin to the point of completion. And some people might have a little bit of a difficulty wrapping their minds around that, because there are people that would say that, well, I don't believe in something like reincarnation. And so what would we say to somebody who doesn't believe in a past life?
Well, I don't really worry about them, to be honest. I mean, past lives are interesting because until you have an experience of one,
mm-hmm.
that's all it's going to take for any non-believer. All they have to do is have one experience or one memory of their own past lifetime, and they'll be convinced. And up until that point, you know, sometimes I think you can talk all you want, and it's not going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is that a lot of religions have made people fear the idea of reincarnation, that it's something bad to believe in, or it's not the truth. But I do have to say that, to put all of that in perspective, I don't believe that reincarnation was Source's intention. I think
uh-huh.
it occurred, you know, once our spirits became a little bit split, and we started going into this dualistic way of thinking. Because once that dualistic happened, karma got created, which is the law of cause and effect. Once you had that, then now you're under the laws of karma, instead of under the laws of love or forgiveness and grace. But you still have the and that's what causes reincarnation, by the way, is the law of cause and effect, or the law of karma. It keeps bringing people back, you know, to at this attempt at balance. But, you know, forgiveness and grace are higher than the laws of karma, and you can clear so much karma by truly forgiving, and that's really what we're being asked to do now, is take it higher, you know, go higher. But you know, when I was mentioning our thoughts, one of the examples, simple examples I can give on how we all keep creating karma is, you know, when we see somebody do something or behave a certain way that we feel is really, you know, horrible, you know, somebody does something horrible to another person, or, you know, even we go through divorces and, you know, we don't wish our ex well, for example, or that person was not a nice person, they'll get there someday, you know. But it's precisely those kinds of thoughts where we say they'll get there someday that actually creates karma for ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, with that person now, because you just judge them, you just wish them ill, and all thoughts take form on some level. So that's the type of, you know, mind amount I think we need to be doing, is catching ourselves when we wish that on others or think that about somebody. You know, because we literally really all are each other, and, you know, I could really go further with this and say we do, my husband and myself, do these classes with quantum jumping, and, you know, we didn't create quantum jumping. It was actually a gentleman by the name of Bert Goldman who did that. But it's the idea that you could, that everything in creation that's ever happened, every scenario that, you know, we're all living all those scenarios in some dimension, someplace, because we are the all that is. And if we're the all that is, everything that's contained in that, you know, we're part of and we're experiencing. So Bert Goldman went and developed this way of jumping into another dimension to meet an alternate self of yours to find out what they're doing, but you make a particular intention first. But I have to tell you that that is so powerful of an exercise, because it proves to you that you have all these multidimensional cells that are doing all these other things, and they're all affecting you, and you're affecting them, and you know, it really brings it home that if you're going to judge something and you're going to separate out something by judging, then, you know, you're going to have to at some point come around and reconcile that no matter what it is.
Yeah, you can't make a decision to get away from it. It just isn't going to, it isn't going to allow you to get away from it. Eventually you'll come back.
Right.
And even if and it's anybody that's really not familiar with some of that, that follows along the same line of thinking where you have Hugh Everett's many worlds theory, where if you choose to not do something, you then created an alternate timeline, which means there's an alternate dimension and everything's going along there just as if you had done it. And so we are in all of these different places, but it's all right now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, I had an experience, too, throughout my life. You know, for some reason, I was always surrounded by people who either did drugs or smoked pot or something. And I myself, you know, just never really got into any of those things, just wasn't interested. So, you know, one day I went to my spirit and I said, I want to know, you know, why is this in my environment? And it took me to an alternate self of mine in another dimension that was a heroin addict. And as soon as I saw it, I went, oh, now I understand, you know. So it was kind of like saying, oh, guess what? There's another self of you that needs help here and, you know, needs some healing energy, or you can be aware of it now. And, again, it just brought enlightenment to, you know, something that's bleeding through this reality, and that happens all the time.
Yeah,
so,
and,
interesting.
Yeah, and the question that pops into my head, Angel, when you say that is, what is you given the opportunity to observe this other self that's addicted to this, leading this life that where it's just all enclosed in its own little bubble, mm-hmm. What is influencing that alternate self that's causing them to insulate themselves away from it and look to that substance?
Well, the way I looked at that self, I actually was looking at a childhood of that particular aspect of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really had put up with a lot of abuse and was a real tortured soul, let's just put it that way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And but I think more important than that is it really wasn't about me trying to change that alternate self, but what it was about was me having compassion and me having understanding and really having to learn that nobody is the way they are without a reason, you know, that there's a cause for every single thing that goes on. And, you know, for years I did psychic surgery on people, and, you know, I'd look at people's energy fields, and I couldn't believe the stuff I was seeing in there and the amount of pain and things from other lifetimes that people are still carrying with them, even to the point of old injuries that are still in their energy field bleeding. You know, somebody could have their head bashed in another life, and I'd look into their fields, and I still see the bashed in head. So, you know, it's anything that isn't reconciled or anything that hasn't come to peace. And it could be positive, too,
mm-hmm.
because I've done surgery people who have difficulty in relationships and can't find the right partner, but you look into their fields and here there is a whole past life scene of them, you know, being blissfully happy with somebody from another time period, and they're waiting for them to show up here now, and nobody else is going to match unless it's that person, and that person might not even be on the planet, you know?
Yeah, and that's something that that I can ask is that Source doesn't want us to take knowledge from all of this and say that it is a necessity that we have to seek out suffering in this life.
Oh, absolutely not. Okay, no. In fact, suffering is an interesting topic too because it's been discussed in detail, and I do think it's addressed in the book too. But it is not Source's will. Suffering, you know, Source's will is ecstasy, like I mentioned early. And they don't mean the drug, you know. They mean, you know, that you have a way of being and seeing where you're you know, you're seeing that field of love that I described everywhere, every moment of every day. And that can only happen when we really do release the whole idea of, you know, judgment and guilt and all of that stuff. But suffering comes from, you know, this whole unworthy idea that we have, this guilt that we have. And even religions, you know. My mother, bless her soul, is a really staunch Catholic, too. She has suffered a lot in her life. She's somebody who's in physical pain every day. And every now and then will ask me, you know, what do I think about her suffering? And I always tell her that I don't think it's God's will, and yet she'll read me some letter from some Catholic priest or somebody that says that people who suffer the most are closer to God than anybody else in the world, you know? And I always have to say, well, Mom, you know, it's not the God I know. And she admitted to me that her suffering has not made her a better person, you know? It's a joyless life she's living, you know? And yet I know the causes of it because I know what's happened to her in her life. But it certainly wasn't God's will. It's the way that she has concluded, you know, her idea of what's happened to her and what it means to her, the association she's made with her, the things that have happened that are causing her pain that she hasn't really reconciled. So, you know, I never think that it's anything that ever comes from God.
And when you have somebody and they're close to you like that, and I mean, nobody, Gail, is going to be closer to you than your mother.
Right.
And you look at it, you're looking, and I'm going to try to use this the best I can. You're looking at what you called in A Time of Change as this split spirit.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at a traumatized spirit. But you see, unless, you know, she's not even a person really that I could be having this conversation with. Because, you know, once a person can hear that the spirit could be traumatized, and she can say, well, yeah, I have a traumatized spirit. I need to go to a higher presence to help me heal it. You know, that's what really has to happen. You know, instead, what's really going on is she's praying to God that she's a good enough person to go to heaven. That's where she's focused, and she made me promise her that I would have all these mass cards, you know, sent to her when she goes, and she was serious, and it's because she doesn't believe that she's loved enough by Source to go to the heaven that she perceives she wants to go to. And it's a sad thing, really, because you're looking at somebody who's really gifted, really talented, and you know she could have relief, but, you know, her identity is connected to her religion, so it's something I don't feel that I'm, you know, I don't have the right to mess with that, you know?
We're not in a position to judge anyone's belief.
That's
And we won't assume to do so. It's, you know, and it's up to each individual person, within this lifetime, whether they can come to the realization that they have to achieve that inner balance, or whether or not they're even involved in the process of trying to achieve.
Right. Well, you know, let me still just comment on guilt one more time for your listeners, because this may help a lot of people. You know, we all have guilt. We all self-punish ourselves in various ways. But, you know, what Source explained to me about guilt was when you feel guilty for something you've done in the past, something you did or you didn't do, or you're blaming another person for something they did or didn't do at a certain time or event in the past, you're actually locking everybody involved. It's almost like you're locking them in an event in time and space, and that keeps you corded to them all. It keeps you psychically corded to everybody involved, and it's almost like you paralyze everybody, and they can't move on, you can't move on past that event, as long as you're hanging on to this idea that somebody deserves to be punished. And I thought that was a real wow moment, you know, with Source about that, because it was basically saying, look, it does you no good. You know, you just lock everybody in place and nobody can move on and nobody can heal. So what's the point, you know?
It actually makes it quite literal when people use that expression that you need to let it go.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, because Source basically said, look, just carry on. You know, you look back in your life and you say, gee, could have done that different, could have been more loving there. You know, Source is basically saying, okay, you learned from it, so carry on and be that, be the person you want to be from this day forward. You know, just make your life about what you want to be now. Don't go back there, because you can't. I mean, it's not like you can go back and direct it or change it anyway. So it's basically saying, you know, the same thing if you judge another person for something they did to you 10 years or 15 years ago. Mm. When you think of them, if you only think of them in terms of that event, you know, you're not seeing them in the now. You're not freeing them to be, to grow and evolve. You're holding them hostage to that event. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, my brother died when he was 22 years old, and he was 2 years older than me, but he wasn't nice to me when I grew up. I mean, he was just not a nice brother. And that's my memory of him. And, you know, years later, I was in a healing workshop, and he came through, and he said, you know, I'm not that person anymore, you know? You know, kind of like, get over it already. You know, I've gone way past that spiritually. I've changed, and don't hold me to that image. And that was pretty powerful for me.
That's a wow moment, you know. And if you have to give, I mean, somebody that may or may not be looking for our advice in the now, and they've either suffered an incredible loss, you know, 30 years ago, or they've suffered a loss last week.
Right.
It's our job to not judge them or judge what they're holding or who they're holding back. And there is this this influence, Gail, if we could probably talk about that for a little bit here and let people know that, you know, not only do we have this plan from Source, this plan of God, but we also do have this negative thing that's going on.
Right. You're talking about in the world, are you?
Yeah, because that's one of the things that influences somebody to not let something that happened to them as a kid go. And they're, you know, everybody's grown up, but you know, since they didn't let go of that, it has a power over them. And even though the other person's thousands of miles away, it has an effect on them because, like you said, we are all connected at that solar plexus level, and the other person may not even be aware that that's what's affecting them, but they're feeling it.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And the thing, too, you know, that's the whole point of consciously forgiving and consciously understanding how damaging judgment really is. Because, you know, we can use the examples ad infinitum about this, but, you know, I'll give people another small images. Like one time I was had a meeting, and I was stepped into this elevator, and I was the only one in the elevator along with this other gentleman, and he was very handsome, and he was wearing really beautiful clothes, but his coat was too big. So in my thoughts I said, really nice clothes, dude, but you're big. And, you know, right at that instant, didn't he start fiddling around with his coat? I mean, I didn't say it verbally, I said it mentally, and he started, all of a sudden, he became very self-conscious.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, that's self-conscious.
Yes. So I thought, oh, my God. I mean, I caught it. I caught what happened, and I said, oh, dude, you know, in my mind, I apologized, and I said, oh, beautiful coat. You know, you look great. And, you know, and then, again, at that second, he just stood up straight. You know, stop fussing with himself. The next thing you know, he stood tall. But it's a small example, but it's a powerful example because we're doing this all the time. And, you know, too, people who've been traumatized in their lives, I'll talk about my mom, and she wasn't a very happy person. She wasn't a very positive person. She was She'd be the one, she'd be the downer, you know? Like, if you had a dream, she'd come out and be the one to say, oh, that'll never happen to you, you know? stuff like that. So, you know, I have spent most of my adult life trying to get over rejection issues, all right? And then what really healed me of it is I came to a place, actually just recently, where I realized, just in the past year, where I realized and admitted how much I loved my mother. You know, instead of always having this perception of her as this negative person, I had to surrender to the truth that deep in my heart I loved this woman. And, you know, suddenly, like, once that happened, you know, it all changed for me. You know, I allowed my mother, despite her own negativity, and, you know, I could say I know where that came from and her and yada, yada. But I just think ultimately, even if you say you were abused as a child, the truth is why it's so painful. It's because, you know, you love your parents or you love, you know, most likely it came from a relative or a parent, you know, most likely. I'm saying not all the time. But the truth is you have love for those people. And, you know, it's not condoning their behavior with you, but underneath it is really this sadness because you love the person. And they violated you, but if you can get past that piece and go to your heart and say, well, truth is, you know, I don't like what you did, but the truth is I love you, and that's the part that hurts, okay? And you can allow yourself to love again, then you can get through just about anything in your life. You know, even my son, you know, he'd go through a series of not so good luck with women, and he would come to a point where he'd say, that's it, never loving another person in my life, you know, no other women. You know, and I see that in men who are divorced, too, you know? Like, they'll be with a new woman, but they'll never open their heart to that new woman the way they did their first wife. And it's because, you know, they're not going to let themselves be hurt that way. But, you know, I said to my son, I said, but that's not what it's about. What it's about is that you say, I love that person deeply, and that's the truth, and I probably still love that person. If you could just admit that to yourself and surrender to it, then, you know, a lot of that pain will disappear because, I said, at least you know, at least you know that you love mm-hmm. the best you could. And I would rather come away with that than say, oh, I got this big barrier around my heart now where, you know, you're only going to get this close to me.
Yeah, because the only thing that's happening in that situation is the person is depriving not only themselves, but they're depriving the other person who believes in their heart that they're worth a relationship.
That's right.
And it really doesn't just apply to a boy-girl relationship, you know, in the standard sense. It could be your relationship with the person that's working in the toll booth when you pull up on the interstate to have to pay the, you know, the 50 cents for driving the last 12 and a half miles.
Right. Exactly. But I think that's the thing that Source has taught me through these records is, look, you know, it's all about love and being loved, and that's what everybody wants and needs. And, you know, the more you can do that, the more you can offer that, the more you can perceive that way and feel that way and receive that way, you know, the more peaceful you are in your life and things don't affect you, you know, in such a serious way. So, you know, I went, of course, I could talk all day about my own experiences, but because I've kind of run the gamut, you know. I also had a partner who committed suicide, and I remember one of the persons that I saw shortly after, she hugged me and she said to me, well, you know, you have to respect his decision. And I wanted to clobber her. Her reaction was anger, you know, like, oh, you know. That's not how I feel right now, you know. But in truth, you know, going through the whole experience and being fortunate enough to be seeing where my partner went after he passed, the different levels he went through, you know, I have reconciled that whole situation, and I do respect his decision, where I certainly didn't do it back then.
Well, Angel, if you forgive us for running out of time,
okay.
we've come up to the end of this episode of Voice of the People Radio. You've been listening to Angel Rose, and Angel Rose is available at AngelRose.com, and that's spelled AngelRose.com, and you can email her by spelling that out and putting that in front of the .com again. And Angel Rose, it's been wonderful to have you as our guest here on Voice of the People Radio, talking about the first book in the series, A Time of Change, and I hope to have you back on when the second book in the series comes out, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank everybody who's listening.
All right, everybody, I want you to stay tuned. You've listened to Angel Rose, and coming up next is Joe Montaldo, Stephanie Benetti, and News on the Flip Side on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Miller, with Voice of the People Radio, and good night.
Good night. Thank you.